95 FM, Urbana-Champaign, Illinois.
Independent Media Center, and today we have our guest speakers, Cynthia Westfeld and Ashley Price, here today to speak on perspectives of paganism. Welcome, ladies.
Hello.
Hello.
So today we're just kind of interested, again, Acting on Faith is a show that kind of overlooks and, well, overviews various religious perspectives, practices, and how they affect our lives and our community. And my shows, this is Rebecca Plummer-Rollup, by the way, and I'm here with Brian Miller and Barbara Kessel.
Hello.
And we are interviewing two friends I recently met and very interested in the role of paganism in the world today, in this culture. Neo-paganism is really the word that we're kind of focusing on today. And I think a lot of people are going to have questions. A lot of people associate paganism with what kind of things? Yesterday we were talking about some symbols that are part of our culture every day.
I think that initially people that aren't familiar with the existence of the neo-pagan revival mostly associate it with a religion that is somehow opposed to Christianity, or somehow alien, or sort of fringy, you know. But it's a religion that has a lot of relevance to a lot of the issues in our modern world. And really, I think a person could look at it as a modern religion that is more akin to some of the more traditional Eastern religions than the Western type of monotheism that most modern people are familiar with.
Before we get into the details, maybe the two of you would like to discuss, discuss where, what organization you actually belong to. What is the name of your group here in town?
We are members of Apple Branch Proto Grove, which is a subgroup within ADF that's on Riocht Féin, a international Indo-European neo-paganism organization. Apple Branch Proto Grove is just a small local congregation. We've got about six people. We meet every 6 weeks or so for our high day rituals, which we've got one coming up in about 2 weeks. And we can talk more about that later, I suppose.
Okay.
Yeah, there are there's a lot of different types of neo-paganism. That's a term, sort of an umbrella term, that covers a lot of different specific modern pagan religions. The three most common would be Wicca, which is the one that people are probably most familiar with. There's also heathenism, or Asatru, which is a Northern European-focused religion. And then there is modern Druidry, of which ADF is a part.
Great. And what are the roles that both of you play within your group? And the group is called ADF,
ADF
for short?
ADF is the shortened term of the larger organization. Our local group, the local congregation, is Apple Branch Proto Grove. I'm the Grove organizer, kind of think the equivalent of president within this group.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And Cindy is our purse warden or treasurer, and also our Grove seer.
Great. And I just want to mention that Ashley is a student at the University of Illinois. She's a senior in history. And did you want to just speak really briefly about what your thesis is on?
I suppose I can. I'm currently researching sexual violence in medieval England. Doesn't quite apply to neo-paganism, but I have many interests.
Okay, and Cindy is a local artist and jeweler. She's a painter, and right now her artwork is up at Heartland Gallery downtown Urbana.
Mm-hmm.
Anything you'd like to share with us, Cindy, about yourself?
I am having a show at Heartland Gallery in July, so there will be more of my work.
Great, yeah. And her work is one of my favorites. It's a lot of trees, and she loves trees. And get out.
Druids like trees.
That. Yeah. That is definitely true.
But we've never played at Stonehenge.
No.
Okay. So if I were to come, as we've been talking over this week, to come to you and say, what does a pagan believe in? What is it? What are some of the traditions and beliefs that...
Like we were talking about the other day, I think that the biggest difference between most of the religions that people are familiar with and neo-paganism is that neo-paganism is, for the most part, a polytheistic religion. That is, when most people come to you and they say, do you believe in God? What they are thinking, or what they really mean, is, how do you see the singular omnipotent power that created the world and ourselves?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if a neo-pagan asks you, what gods do you believe in? They would be saying, which of the many, many powers that shape our world and influence us and inspire us, you know, which ones of those inspire you?
Okay.
And belief is not exactly the correct way
right.
when understanding
uh-huh.
that.
Sure.
Because a neo-pagan will recognize that there are many, many deities, hundreds of them, most of whom we do not deal with. Most neo-pagans will have a specific subset, whether a pantheon or even a subset within that pantheon, that they prefer to work with.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, a pagan might only ever worship one god, but they still realize there are many, many other gods that exist.
Okay, so one of the overarching kind of practices and beliefs, or give me another word for belief that you would use to...
Understanding, I think, would probably be a better word than belief, I suppose.
Right. Okay, so would be polytheism. What are some other concepts, ideas, traditions that you...
Nature worship is often a fundamental aspect of most neo-pagan faiths. It's very... Wiccans and all the other neo-pagans are well known for their respect and worship of the earth. Mother Earth is fundamental.
Right. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, and as a doctrinal difference, I suppose, you could say that a lot of monotheistic religions regard the physical world and nature as something that we are given dominion over, or something that is ultimately fallen or sort of removed from divinity to a certain degree.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in many, if not all, neo-pagan faiths, there is a very sort of green environmentalist philosophy that goes along with it, and it's a lot of that is because we believe or we understand that the physical world is the seat of the numinous, and it can contain divinity, that the divine is not removed from the world, but it is intimately part of it and part of nature.
Great. Okay. Well, that's probably one of the largest things that many people can understand in terms of the idea of being connected, interconnected, the universe is interconnected.
Yeah, the web of life, basically.
Yeah, exactly. And it's found throughout lots of world religions. So in that regard, paganism is really not that much different than any other traditions.
But the way we understand it is largely different because in my discussion about paganism with many monotheists, they don't quite understand that we do not view salvation, like we don't consider salvation at all. We do not need to be saved. The divine is here now. The
right.
world around us is holy, and we do not need to transcend that
right.
as part of
right.
our religion.
And that would be true in Buddhism, Zen, a lot of other world traditions. Another belief is in ancestor worship. Tell me a little bit about how you might practice that within paganism.
Well, with ancestor worship, it's the sense that we recognize and honor those who have come before us, who have influenced our way of understanding the world now, and who have really created this world. Consequently, we feel it is our duty to pay them respect, to invite them to our feasts, and to always remember them.
Mm-hmm. So there's a connection to community, even community that's past.
Correct.
Which is quite different than Christianity or other traditions in that regard. Okay. Other things. How about, you know, one of the things that come up a lot is traditionally the word paganism, as we discussed yesterday, is so connected to Christianity, to the lack of God, or the lack of moral sacrifice being, you know, what we were talking about yesterday, the idea of sacrificing babies, you know, this kind of mindset. But so some people would think that, you know, to be a pagan is to be amoral. To be a pagan is to not really care about, you know, other people. But it seems to me like that's absolutely the opposite. And could you address?
Right.
Certainly. One thing that's important in understanding paganism is we do not have a specific doctrine that is handed down on us from high, a set of rules that we must follow or we will be considered to be in a state of sin. Modern paganism views morals as a social good which helps make society function smoothly. It's about upholding the community and balance and not really stepping on another person's toes.
Right, morals as in a more humanist sense, where morals are something that arise from the human breast because we contain the spark of the divine, instead of the divine having to hand down, you know, a set of strictures or a set of rules.
Mm-hmm.
I will be the first to admit that I do not know too much about Wiccanism. However, the Wiccan Rite, which is the central kind of tenet of Wicca is, "An it harm none, do what thou wilt." Essentially, mm-hmm. as long as you are not hurting anyone else, what you do is fine. Mm-hmm. All that matters is that you do not infringe on another person's rights mm-hmm. or harm the community in any
right.
way.
Right. And if we could go back a minute to one of the values of paganism is the unity of nature. And you had mentioned that environmentalism is a really important part, and most pagans tend to be somewhat of an
yes.
environmentalist.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Yeah, and that goes along with... Yes, you could say that to a certain extent, environmentalism is almost a moral imperative
yes,
within neo-paganism. You know, it has to do with respect for oneself and for others, respect for the earth, with achieving that sort of harmony and balance in a sustainable way, you know, to live on this planet. You know, it goes along with the idea that just as we have the spark of divine within us, and just as divine in all its different forms is imminent in the in the earth and within our world, you know, everything should be respected. You know, even the trees, even the land on which we walk, everything.
Right. Right. Okay. There's another word I'd like to bring up, which is magic.
Ooh, magic.
And you know, define magic for us.
Magic, I would say, is there's sort of a modern traditional definition of magic, which is that magic is the art of changing consciousness with will. I think Aleister Crowley said it, and even though he was a giant weirdo, he did still have some good ideas, for better or for worse. You know, people think of magic in sort of this Hollywood kind of way. You know, you're pointing a wand and flames leap from the end, or, you know, the sort of, you know, you think of Gandalf, you think of Harry Potter and,
yes.
and stuff like that.
Yes.
But ultimately, in an everyday context and in a you know, for most modern pagans, I must mention that not all modern pagans practice magic, but many do.
Mm-hmm.
It's you know, the small things, like, you know, even when Christians pray, as Ashley mentioned in our last conversation, that's a type of magic. That is, you're putting your will and your consciousness out there in the universe.
Mm-hmm.
The fundamental difference between Christian prayer and neo-pagan magic or spells is that Christians will simply clasp their hand and, you know, let their will be heard in the universe, whereas pagans will light some candles, burn some incense, make an offering, do something else to amp up the energy a little
mm-hmm.
bit. But the
mm-hmm.
fundamental purpose is the same.
Yeah, Brian.
Well, I find that fascinating, linking, comparing Christian prayer or prayer to magic spells. I can see a linkage, especially because so many prayers are really self-centered about things we want.
Mm-hmm.
Also want to mention to all our listeners that you can call in if you have a question. The number is 344-2536. We will do our best to get you on the air. As the phone rings in, please be patient as we try to make the connection and not cut you off. But if you feel so inclined to call, please do. 344-2536.
Okay. So if we can maybe go back, we're talking about kind of the comparison between prayer and casting a spell. Or
right. Yeah, because many times when people are doing magic, and unlike with a lot of monotheistic religions, neo-paganism does not see magic as something that is anti-deity or, you know, against God. You know, again, since, you know, the gods are everywhere and the world is magical, so magic is not sinful.
Right.
Well,
right.
you're doing much what prayer is supposedly doing, which is calling on God,
yeah,
calling on the deity,
you're
calling
saying,
on the force,
you know,
that is here.
Here I am. I appreciate you. You know, I have faith in you, but I need something from you.
Right.
Right. Well,
within,
very parallel.
Within paganism, we do not necessarily view our gods as omniscient and omnipotent. Therefore, for them to know what we need, to know what's bothering us, we have to let them know.
Yeah,
right.
you have to talk to them.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to put your energy and put your will out there. The universe is huge. You know, how is anybody going to know, you know, what you need or what you want,
right.
or without you saying anything?
Right.
And Christian prayer does the same. When you know, the conservative fundamental radio shows say, all of you out there, raise your voice in prayer so that God will hear us better.
Right.
Exactly.
What is the difference?
It's the same idea, the same philosophy, more or less.
Yeah. So let's go a little bit about into this idea of worship. And what is worship for you? How do you experience worship?
Worship for me is paying honor and respect to the gods who have been there for me, who have helped me through so many things. I owe them my honor because of this.
Mm-hmm.
The fundamental act in at least Druid worship, what within ADF and such, is the act of sacrifice. Now, by sacrifice, I don't mean, you know, chopping off animals' heads and pouring blood over an altar. We don't do anything like that. Simply making an offering. My most common offering is a loaf of bread.
Mm-hmm.
It is something that I put my energy and something I care very much about. I am a baker. And I put all of myself into this bread, and then I give that bread to the gods as a sign of honor.
Right. So as in any kind of practice, there, you know, your heart is a part of it, and it's about honor and respect. But someone might ask, to whom do you offer?
Well, as I said before, most pagans will have a patron or patroness that they work with. My primary patron is the Irish goddess Bridget. She's also known in modern Catholicism as Saint Bridget. There's a lot of evidence to suggest that they're the same cult and the same person, being, what have you.
Mm-hmm.
And she is my main patron. Cindy has her own as well.
And as we talked the other day, you know, another question might be, well, how is it that this deity comes to you? How do you find it? There's so many deities all over, you know, how is it that somebody that is interested in practicing this comes to that knowledge?
When a lot of people talk about the way that they came to paganism in general, it's almost like a coming home. You know, you find out about things and you say, oh, there is a name for what I already felt. There is a name for, you know, the way I view the world and what I already believe in. And as far as the way that a certain god might choose a person or a person, you know, you might just become interested in them and do, you know, more scholarly research or read the myths and really like them. You might have a very powerful dream. You know, it's very personal and very subjective.
I was fascinated. You mentioned one saint who is, and I forgot the names already.
Bridget.
Who's also... who is historically, mythologically linked to one of the Roman Catholic saints.
Yes.
Can you think of other saints who are also linked with other pagan gods?
Not specifically.
Off the top of your head?
Some of the Irish saints are more sort of mythologically, you know, based than...
Bridget is the most obvious example, most well-attested. What's more common is there are a lot of pagan practices that have been introduced into Christianity throughout the Middle Ages. I'm sorry, I keep on speaking too far away from the microphone. But a lot of modern practice with secular religious practice, like Halloween and Easter and such, comes from ancient paganism.
Yeah, people, you know, since Easter was the most recent holiday we had, and people, you know, scratch their heads and ask, well, what does a rabbit with laying brightly colored eggs have to do with the resurrection? Well, nothing. It's just a folk survival of pre-Christian, you know, pre-Christian fertility. You know, it's a fertility symbol. That said, one of the main sort of modern myths that neo-paganism has had to conquer, I guess, is this belief that there is some sort of direct survival or this lineage down, you know, from the pre-Christian past through the Middle Ages and unto the modern day. That's actually not the case. You know, even though, yes, there were folk practices and, you know, native customs and stuff that survived, you know, things like the maypole and things like, you know, the Easter bunny and, you know, lighting up, you know, putting lights on a tree and bringing it into your house during, you know, the Christmas season and things like that. But even though those practices are born out of earlier pagan traditions, they're really just folk survivals. So modern paganism, it is a modern religion. You know, it's based on ancient practices, you know, and ancient customs and ancient beliefs, but it is adapting those to fit our modern world.
Mm-hmm.
Much as Christianity has adapted them to fit seasonal events and festivals, to sanitize them to fit into Christianity and theoretically separate them from paganism or polytheism, when in reality it's just It's just a synergy.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. And no religion is born in a vacuum. There's always a synergy and using beliefs and traditions that are already present.
Well, and the idea also of being embedded in nature is that we are also embedded in the seasons of life and cycles.
Yeah, the cycle of the year and the eight modern neo-pagan holidays are very important. And ADF does celebrate, these eight holidays that form a complete wheel or cycle of the year.
Right.
They are largely tied to agricultural festivals. Most people have heard of them. They're, first of all, the four, the equinoxes and the solstices, which most people are familiar with, but also February 2nd we have Imbolc, the beginning of spring. May 1st coming up, we have Beltane, the beginning of summer and the growing season. Lunaza, August 1st, which is the harvest, and Samhain, October 31st, which is the beginning of winter.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Great. Well, I think we should take a station break here just a moment. And before we do so, I have some announcements to make. As I'm sitting here, there is in the other room at the Independent Media Center a large book sale going on, Pages for Pennies book sale to benefit the UC Books to Prisoners. We will be here until 5 o'clock today. The books go very cheap, and they're really great selections still to be found. We'll be open tomorrow also from 10 to 5 and also Monday from 10 to noon. So if you can stop by, do a little donation to Books to Prisoners and take away some great books, that would be great. Then we also have Road to Guantanamo. This is a free movie screening, discussion, and action planning at the First Mennonite Church, Monday, April 23rd, shedding light on the legal black hole of Guantanamo. So put that on your calendars. And last but not least, let's see, Captain James Youssef Yee, a former U.S. Army Muslim chaplain at Guantanamo Bay Prison, will be speaking about his experiences at the prison on Sunday, this Sunday, from noon to 1:15, at 228 Natural History Building on campus. So this Sunday from noon to 1, we're going to have a Muslim chaplain, James Youssef, who worked at once at Guantanamo Bay, will be speaking. It's a free, open to the public lecture, so please put that on your calendar as well. And we'll be back in just a few minutes.
This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine.
Okay, we are back today. This is Acting on Faith at 104.5 WRFU at the Independent Media Center. This is Rebecca Plummer-Roloff. I'm your host, and I'm along with Brian Miller.
Hello.
And today we have Cynthia Westfield. And
it's Westfield, actually. Sorry.
Oh, I have it written down wrong in my book. I'm sorry.
Oh, well.
And who is a local jeweler and an artist who's having a show at Heartland Gallery in the month of?
July.
And she has just a few pieces up there now. Heartland Gallery is located in downtown Urbana, right next to like Mirabella Gallery, the Cinema Gallery, Mirabella mm-hmm. Bakery, and that kind of stuff. And then Ashley Price is a senior in history, and her thesis is?
It's on sexual violence in medieval England.
Right. And today we're doing talking about perspectives of paganism. And before we do so, I'd like to just throw out this disclaimer that WRFU is an open forum for the Urbana-Champaign community, and the views expressed are those of the speakers and are not intended to represent WRFU, UCIMC, or the Urbana Socialist Forum. And also, I'd like to really quickly share today, I am one of the teaching assistants at the Japan House, and today we're having our open house. It goes until 4 o'clock today. There's a speaker, a consulate general of Japan, who is speaking at the Japan House at 2 o'clock for 1 hour this afternoon. There are tea ceremonies throughout the day, so if you want to make it over there, we'll be closing up at about 4 o'clock, so you can join us there. And then also, if you'd like to make a phone call us in, ask a question. We'd love to hear from you. The number here is 344-2536. Okay, so let's get back to some announcements.
I would also like to make a couple of announcements. If you have any questions about this, you want to contact me personally, my email is ashley@apple-branch.org. The Grove's website is apple-branch.org. Additionally, we will be having our Beltane Rite on Wednesday, May 2nd at 7:30 p.m., and we'll be holding it in the University of Illinois Arboretum. If you have any questions, like I said, just email me, ashley@apple-branch.org.
And we'll make that announcement again at the end also. So let's get back again a little bit about paganism and maybe the historic origins. Where does the word paganism come from?
Well, the word pagan, it comes from the Latin word paganus, which basically means country dweller or somebody rural. And it was originally used in pre-Christian imperial Rome. That is what the legions would refer to the civilians as. It was kind of an elitist term, in fact. It meant, you're just a civilian, you're a rookie, you know, you're a hick.
Yeah.
but it was used in a similar way by the early Christians, from what I understand, especially those that felt themselves to be, you know, sort of, you know, soldiers for Christ,
sure.
and missionaries, to talk about anybody who wasn't part of their organization, part of their religion, so that's sort of the way that it got attached to meaning a non-Christian religion, you know. But it originally did mean country dweller.
Mm-hmm. I was just going to stress that paganism is not a single the term paganism does not refer to any single religion, but simply like the Greek word barbarian, you know, only refers to somebody other.
Mm-hmm.
But Cindy already made that point.
Right. I mean, paganism is an umbrella term or a blanket term for many different religions, many of which are, you know, tribally based or polytheistic. And the reason that we call we call it neo-paganism instead of just paganism is because, again, it is a modern religion. It has its origins in the modern day, but based on ancient traditions. Just straight up paganism, or as some would say, paleo-paganism, is a polytheistic religion that is unchanged. For example, if there was a culture that still had their original sort of tribal structure and tribal religion, that would be considered a pagan religion, perhaps. But it's not a modern reconstruction or a revival. It's simply, you know, a polytheistic or animist religion that mm-hmm. they've always had.
While we do get our inspiration for our religion from the past, from the Indo-European tradition, and I can talk about more about that in a moment, we have no misconceptions that we are following an ancient religion that has been unbroken to this time. There was a very large break, and modern neo-paganism did not start until the 1950s with Gerald Gardner.
Okay. And, you know, one of the comments you made a couple days ago when we were talking was this idea that it's a non-matriarchal. There's a non-matriarchal prehistory, which means that it's not rooted in
misconception that in Europe, prior to the time of Christ, that there was a universal matriarchal society with a female worshiping religion. It's what people call the myth of the matriarchal past. Some people believe this, but it is patently false. There is no evidence that there was ever a matriarchy in Europe, ever.
So again, this idea that people might consider pagan, you know, when people call themselves pagans, or they're Wiccans or witches for that matter, that they're women, and it's this group of women out here doing this crazy stuff.
But I mean, yeah, it doesn't, you know, there's this concept that all witches are women, but no, you know, paganism, you know, welcomes men and women equally. Mm-hmm. The reason that the myth of the matriarchal past is so important, and to recognize that it is perhaps, or you know, basically not true, is that because modern paganism arose in the 50s and 60s at the same time when there are other important social movements going on, such as feminism, the rise of the ecological movement, they all sort of influenced each other.
Mm-hmm, sure.
So, you know, which is part of why paganism is so green, so environmentally based.
Mm-hmm.
Much neo-paganism does recognize the spark of divinity within women, and there are many goddesses that are worshipped, which is mm-hmm. in stark contrast to much of modern monotheism, mm-hmm. and which is why it is very empowering to a lot of mm-hmm. women. And there are specific traditions within Wicca, for example, that are all female. Mm-hmm. There's the Dianic tradition where they only worship goddesses and they only allow women into their covens.
Mm-hmm.
But having said that, it's important for modern paganism and for ADF, specifically the group that we're in, we really stress...
And what does ADF stand for again?
It stands for Arnrioch Fine, or Our Own Druidry, and it's a modern druid tradition. And we really stress accurate scholarship and really finding out, like, what did the ancients believe in their myriad practices,
mm-hmm.
and how can we use this in the modern day? It's not really strict reconstructionism. We're not trying to live like they did in the Iron Age.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because there's this overwhelming modern assumption that to be valid, a religion must be ancient.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, because of that, in the early days of the neo-pagan revival, there were a lot of myths attached to neo-paganism that have in more recent years been proven false. There was this idea that Wicca or modern witchcraft was an unbroken surviving tradition from pre-Christian tradition and from the Middle Ages,
mm-hmm.
but it really isn't. There was really no good evidence to support that.
Right.
There was this feminist myth, which is very empowering, that before the patriarchal religions came along, you know, there was one religion throughout old Europe that worshipped one matriarchal mother goddess, but it's not, and despite the fact that it's empowering myth, there really is no scientific fact, mm-hmm. good scientific fact to back that up.
Great. So in the contemporary world, with two women sitting in front of me, we can say that it's not a feminine-rooted organization, the ADF, or
yeah.
paganism in general.
One thing that I would like to stress is gender is really not an issue within
mm-hmm.
ADF.
Right.
I mean, within Wicca and such, certain traditions will have, you know, gender roles that are important. I don't know too much about it, just what I've read in books. Within Druidry, gender does not matter. It is not an
mm-hmm.
issue.
Right.
It's more equalist, I suppose,
mm-hmm.
than...
Again, going back to the ecology, the social ecology, that there is divine nature in all things, and then it's
yes.
the divine nature, the essence, is what we're looking for. Maybe you can talk about how you both came to paganism.
Well, I have something somewhat of a different path than most people. I was never raised Christian. My religious upbringing as a child consisted of, so there's this guy named Jesus, and he's the Son of God, and he was born on Christmas. Yeah. I mean, literally, that is all I knew about religion growing up. That is it. I always believed that there was more than one God, that all of these religions couldn't possibly be wrong, the Greeks, the Romans, etc. And when I was 11, I read a fantasy book that talked about this, Myths of Avalon. It'll come up a lot in the study of paganism. And it was one of those, I had this realization that what they're talking about is essentially what I believe. I never converted to paganism. I simply found a name.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And Cindy, it's similar.
Yeah, definitely a similar experience. And like Ashley, even though many people do come to modern paganism from a predominantly Christian or monotheist background, I was never raised very religiously. My family would, you know, we would go to church once a year on Easter, and that's about it. You know, so I wasn't raised really religiously, but I did grow up in a rural setting. I grew up in the country, so technically I am a paganus. Hick or country dweller, I have always had a strong connection with nature, especially with forests,
right.
since my parents' property was mostly wooded,
right.
And so I always felt that there was a sense of the numinous, or that there was something beyond just what I could see, just the physical world out there,
right.
in that semi-wild and untouched nature, and.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I always felt that if there were gods or powers that shaped the world, there must be a lot of them. You know, the fact that there is this sort of one, you know, one god or one sort of ladder that goes, you know, from God to people. You know, that it must be more diverse than that.
Right.
And so when I got older, and being from a rural environment, of course, I didn't really know much about modern, you know, pagan religions until I went to college. And I am interested in mythology and history and archaeology and things like that. So when I found out that there was a modern tradition, you know, based on these, you know, this sort of ancient diversity and polytheism. Yes, it was more finding a name to the way I already looked at the world, rather than a conversion.
Right. So, with that said, how do you practice these values in your life? How do they influence you, change you, cause you to act in the world?
As far as everyday life, it's basically, like, I like to think of paganism as sort of a way of paying attention to the world, and especially for me, with my reverence for nature. Most people look at nature as ultimately irrelevant. It's just this pretty green background against which we live our lives. But in the 21st century, you know, with the internet and with global, you know, trade, I mean, who cares?
Technology.
You know, it doesn't really matter. But it does. You are part of nature. You're not apart from it.
Sure.
And so
we've been absolutely disconnected.
Right. Yeah. There's this decent sense of disconnection and apartness. And really, you know, paying attention to the nature around you, trying to get out in nature, and trying to live in a way that sort of respects nature. I mean, granted, I'm not a vegetarian. You know, I recycle, you know, in small ways. I try to, you know, keep my carbon footprint a little smaller than it otherwise would be.
But it's about carrying a certain quality of consciousness and conscience with you all the time. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, basically, a way of paying, of being aware, a way of paying attention.
And Ashley, what about you?
Well, there are many things that I do to kind of bring my paganism into my life. One thing is I mostly work with the Irish pantheon, and there's this Irish pagan value of hospitality. In Iron Age Ireland, there were no cities. There were just five provinces, tribes running around, warrior bands, etc. And you would, like, these royal retinues, these large warrior bands, would go to various hostels when they're out traveling. And it was the hosteler's duty to attend to the needs of all of these warriors, but it was also the warrior band's duty to be a good guest, the reciprocity. Much of Irish myth is about what happens when this hospitality is broken. In my own life, I host dinner parties, and I make a very strong effort to make sure that all of my guests are happy, well-fed, lots of drink flowing, of course, mm-hmm. Having to not invite people that I know will cause disruption and insult my other guests. Mm-hmm. I've unfortunately had stuff like that pop up. Another thing with the ecology, there's this wonderful book out there called Noah's Garden that talks about how modern gardening practice is really sterile and not ecologically sound. So I just bought a house, and when I'm planning my garden for next year and I have time to actually garden, I will be putting all native plants in there in more of a wild setting, so my front yard will be prairie grasses and such, to try to bring in biodiversity in my neighborhood instead of just the solid green grass that you see everywhere.
Great. I'm at a loss for words just thinking, wow, you know.
Since neopaganism as a whole is such a diverse, you know, there are a number of diverse traditions, everyone could tell you a slightly different story.
Absolutely.
About how it impacts their everyday life and what they consider numinous, you know,
sure.
And what is special to them, you know, and so it's really, you know, it is a very sort of, you know, personal,
right.
Personal relationship with the world and with the deity.
You know, you're throwing that word out, luminous and numinous, and mm-hmm. There's a book that we've both discussed, The Spell of the Sensuous, and the author is David Abrams.
Yes.
Yeah, David Abrams. If you're interested in kind of an ecological, environmental approach to being united with what is,
right.
You know, the energy of nature and the world,
right.
That's a wonderful book.
Interestingly enough, well, in that book, he also, he talks about it's primarily a linguist text in that he talks about the evolution of language and how the evolution of the written word, et cetera, has sort of caused an apartness from nature.
Mm-hmm.
In us. But yes, as far as an ecological philosophy text, it is right. Very interesting.
And another resource we can give to our listeners on kind of the ancient history of paganism is a History of Pagan Europe.
Mm-hmm.
The author?
It's by Nigel Pennick and
okay.
Prudence Jones.
Great.
And it's a pretty good general introduction to various Indo-European mythologies and practices. It's not too scholarly language, so it's very accessible for mm-hmm. the lay reader.
Yes, it's a good beginning read. They talk about the Greeks, the Romans, the Celts, Northern Europeans,
sure.
You know,
okay.
Some of the Slavic and Baltic tribes, which, mm-hmm. which, you know, you usually don't hear about too much. So, yeah, it's a good overview for
okay.
the beginner.
Great. And then there's one last final kind of more modern contemporary book called Drawing Down the Moon by Margot Adler.
Yes.
So.
And that talks about the history of modern neo-paganism. It's a really wonderful book, and it'll give you a good overview of a lot of the groups that are around right now. It was originally written in, I believe, the 80s?
I think so. It just went into its third edition, its third update, within this last year, I think.
Okay. You know, one of the things that we were mentioning earlier was this idea, well, a couple of days ago actually, was the idea that there are lots of misconceptions about paganism, and you'd like to kind of set some of those straight. And then there are a lot of contemporary problems with pagans in the contemporary world. What are some of those? Can you tell us about
that? Some of the ones that are the biggest in the news right now, within the military, the government does not want to allow Wiccan soldiers to have their symbol on their tombstone, which is the pentacle or the pentagram. I can never remember which one it is. There's technical differentiation between those two words. Anyways, so there's a lot of issue with pagans in the military and their families fighting for the right to have their religion recognized when their soldiers die in battle.
Okay.
Yeah, recognized as a real religion, basically, you know, as opposed to a fringe group or a cult or, you know, this flaky weird thing that only flaky weirdos involve themselves in. I mean, neo-paganism is a pretty quick growing modern religion.
It is the fastest growing religion in America these days.
And it's unfortunate for all our lip service in this country to diversity, to, you know, political correctness, to, mm-hmm. you know, to acceptance and tolerance and all these things, that someone could still lose their job or have their children taken away from them in a custody case,
mm-hmm.
you know, or, you know, be denied the use of a certain religious symbol on their tombstone just because they practice a religion that is misunderstood. It's unfortunate, but it does happen.
As an example, I believe it was last spring in Indiana, a judge told a woman that she could not raise her son Wiccan as part of a custody suit. I mean,
wow.
I find it completely absurd and wrong, but mm-hmm.
with this thing called the separation of church and state.
Exactly. Yes, yes.
Religious practice. Well, great. Well, would you like to give the announcement again about this upcoming event that
Certainly.
You're planning on doing?
Apple Branch Protogrove will be hosting its Beltane ritual on Wednesday, May 2nd. We're starting at 7:30 p.m. and we'll be hosting it at the University of Illinois Arboretum on South Lincoln Avenue. If you can meet us at the farther south parking lot, it's right near the Japan House. If you have any questions, you can email me directly at ashley@apple-branch.org, and our Grove's website is apple-branch.org. The website for the larger group is www.adf.org.
Can you tell us a little bit about that holiday or that festival?
Beltane is traditionally May 1st. It is seen as the beginning of summer. It is a fertility festival. Modern understanding of the practice, May Day, the May pole. Mm-hmm. I mean, you have a large phallic object sticking out of the ground and people dancing around it.
We won't have a maypole, though, unfortunately.
We won't be doing a maypole.
But it would be fun. But, yeah, I mean, this is the time of year when, you know, life is bursting out of the earth and young animals are being born and flowers are blooming and, you know, after it's been dark and cold and dreary, you know, the sun is shining and it's time to be exuberant and celebrate, you know, the return of, you know, the longer days and the green and sort of the return of life to the earth.
Excellent, excellent. Well, are there any other thoughts, concerns that you'd like to approach to our audience in terms of paganism, what you'd like to leave them thinking about?
Well, I think overall a good way to look at it is that paganism is not a religion that, don't look at it as just standing apart from Christianity or as opposed to Christianity, but as a, it's a separate, viable modern religion, you know, and a lot of people do tend to look at paganism as opposed to something or in relation to something else, you know, just because it is very different from the dominant monotheism that subconsciously as well as consciously informs our culture. I mean, a lot of our practices and beliefs and the way we think about things, we don't even think about it on a conscious level, but it is, you know, it is a monotheistic view, but the polytheistic, the ecologically centered view, it's something different, but it's not something dangerous, it's not something, you know, dark, it's just another religion among many.
You know, one of the things I was thinking about as I was interviewing you ladies the other day was there's a Episcopal priest named Matthew Fox who comes out of, obviously, a Christian tradition. He was actually excommunicated from the Catholic Church for bringing these ideas of spirituality, nature-based spirituality, into the Christian faith. I don't see how it's separated in the idea that we worship, Christians technically worship the Creator God, who has the Son of God in the form of Christ. And so the book, the idea of coming of the cosmic Christ. And so in that regards, I think that there's a move in Christianity to bring some of this pagan ideas that are rooted in our creation, the fact that we are part of the world our bodies, our souls, our bodies are all material and spiritual.
Very controversial.
Yes, absolutely. You know, absolutely. Controversial. Yeah. Yeah, and that's probably why I'm interested in it. Brian.
Well, the controversy is that people assume it weakens or denies or denigrates an afterlife, which is salvation and is basically a prosperity theology concept,
right,
that you're going to win in the end, and if your religion doesn't allow for that, then, you know, people always say, why bother? If evangelism isn't going to convert you to my religion, why bother evangelizing?
Right.
Rather than trying to just help someone live a better life now,
right,
today,
exactly.
It's all about me looking good. Even the idea of monotheism, where we identify with a superior being, we always assume if we identify with that superior being, it makes us better, makes us superior.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Even the elite, you know, calling other people pagans, which are country folk as opposed to us, the elitist here in the city, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well,
I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, and that's, you know, one of the words that we haven't talked about that I find very fascinating is the use of the word ego. And where does ego fit in terms of religion, our practices? So, you know, I come from kind of a traditional Christian background, and I've worked myself through lots of world religions and lots of different practices. And what I see, the thread through all of that, is this idea of laying down of the ego, of putting the ego aside. And what mainstream Christianity does, it continues the strength of the ego in terms of, you know, when you have a particular Godhead, the Spirit of Christ, and that anything outside of that, based on, again, the Word of God is the truth,
I think the main unbridgeable gap between neo-paganism and Christianity is that one of the Ten Commandments is, thou shalt have no other god before me.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
We are a religion, a polytheistic religion that believes in many gods.
Mm-hmm.
So there's really no getting around that.
Right. But the idea that, you know, in order to participate in kind of a spiritual practice, a religious practice, how does it function in our lives?
Mm-hmm.
That the idea of allowing life to let go of what you believe is true and right, and to trust the universe, to trust what is, is an issue of laying down the self, letting go of ego.
Yeah, sort of putting the ego aside.
Yeah.
Because nobody has the whole truth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the universe is too big and too deep and too complex for somebody to be so egotistical assume that they have the whole truth.
Well, and that's one of the reasons why I think, from a Christian perspective, that it's difficult to understand a pagan perspective, because, you know, you've got your faith laid out before you. You know, you've got the Word of God, you've got this direction and this path, and this is what makes you a good person. And so if you know you can stick on that path, then you're safe, you're saved, you're safe. But it lacks the ability to ask questions and to inquire and to move forward in that way. Before we close, we've just got a few minutes here. I'm going to make a disclaimer again that WRFU is an open forum for the Banff-Champaign community, and the views that we have expressed today are not intended to represent WRFU, the UCIMC, or their Banff Socialist Forum. Well, ladies, thank you for coming today.
You're welcome.
Yeah, and you know what? Before we leave, I guess I'll go over the announcements again. We are having this wonderful book sale today, Pages for Pennies, to benefit the UC Books to Prisoners program. We'll be here until 5 o'clock this afternoon. The books are cheap. There are many. There are various titles, $1, I think, per book. So this whole weekend and Monday, so from 10 to 5, and Monday from 10 to noon. So please try to make it out on this rainy day. Also, if you want to make your announcement again.
So as I've mentioned a couple of times, the Grove will be holding its Beltane Rite on Wednesday, May 2nd at 7:30 p.m. at the U of I Arboretum. If you have any questions, please email me at ashley@apple-branch.org.
Okay, and then this Sunday from noon to 1 at the Natural History Building, room 228, Captain James Yusuf Yee, who is a former U.S. Army Muslim chaplain at Guantanamo Bay, will be speaking about his experiences there. It's a lecture, free and open to the public, sponsored by the Muslim Student Association. And finally, on Monday the 23rd at 7 p.m. at First Mennonite Church of Champaign-Urbana, there's The Road to Guantanamo, a free movie screening, discussion, and action planning. So you can try to make it out there. And last but not least, today until 4 o'clock at the Japan House, we are having open tea ceremonies and a guest speaker, the Consulate General of Japan from the consulate up in Chicago, will be talking about Japanese-American relationships. And that's until 4 o'clock today at the Japan House. Is there anything else?
The only other thing is I could mention it. This is WRFU 104.5 LP in Urbana. And just quickly, First Mennonite Church, if you're interested in that program, it's at the corner of Springfield and Lincoln. Other than that, I would just say goodbye.
Okay. Well, I just want to say thank you to Ashley and Cynthia for enlightening us. I think it's been Cindy, sorry. I haven't written this down, Cynthia, for inviting us. And it's very possible that we might be able to do this kind of show again. So
I'd love to be back.
Great. Okay, well, thank you. Okay, thanks.
Next week on Acting on Faith, you will be hearing Jason Merrick interviewing a person from the Baha'i faith. So I hope you'll tune in again at 12 o'clock, 104.5, Acting on Faith, every Saturday.
Great. Tell your friends and family to tune in. Thanks.